London. This is The Truth About Markets with Stacy and
Max Kaiser
and
Madge Weinstein.
Oh my God, yes, we are walking through a Paris park, Parc Monceau, with Madge Weinstein. Ooh. Not other than Madge Weinstein. How do you feel about that, Max?
Well, it's fantastic, of course, because on The Truth About Markets show, we like to delve into the inner workings of markets and all of the concurrent and concomitant psychological factors that determine these markets. Of course, Madge Weinstein is a world-renowned expert in these areas.
My thighs are rubbing together.
That kind of friction is what we need to generate the new century. If we can float some thigh-rubbing collateralized mortgage obligations, we can finance this new century.
Well, Madge, how do you feel about being here in Paris?
Well, until this show started, I thought I was going to be in London, and I was all excited to be in London for the first time, and then you said we're in Paris, and I realized we are. I'm very excited. It's wonderful to be not only in Paris, but outside of the United States, which is experiencing Bachmania at the moment, which is just completely retarded.
Is that Michelle Bachmann woman?
No, I thought you were referring to the composer, Bach.
We don't know who that is.
I see.
The
well,
Lady Gaga?
We were, you never know with this crew. It could be Cairo, it could be Beirut, it could be London, it could be Dublin. You know, our next trip on the road will be the Kilkenomics Economics and Comedy Festival in Kilkenny, Ireland. That would be November, early part of November, 4th, 5th, and 6th, I believe. You have to see Stacey Herbert for details.
See maxkaiser.com for details. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, first week of November, you're going to see Stacey Herbert, Max Kaiser, and Madge Weinstein in Kilkenny.
Who killed Kenny?
Cartman.
You see, he's an she's an American. You do kind of look masculine today, Madge.
It's very sexist of you to refer to me as a man. A lot of people do that because they mix lesbianism with gender, and it's just not the case.
Sure, lesbianism is not gender specific.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it isn't.
Well, so we're here in Parc Monceau, where the people look happy. It's all sunny and warm. It's unusually warm, but of course you're not allowed to say that in this day and age. I was reading a piece on the Bloomberg, and it talked about, it said the markets versus politicians on global warming. Uh-oh. Oh, no. Look, people are whipping out their keyboards now and typing hate mail right as they're listening to this. They're saying, oh, Max, I'll never listen to you again if you mention global warming. Anyway.
Not just any kind of global warming, but man-made global warming.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But Bloomberg has this great piece about the markets versus politicians and how it's just some right-wing American politicians and Fox News alone with this against global warming, denying it happens. In the meantime, the markets are moving forward because based on the insurance industry, which Max always says is that underlies the entire markets and capitalism, and they're pricing in this stuff. They're looking, they are actually have advanced models of how much this is going to cost them, and they say that it would be actually cheaper, according to their models, to prevent it from getting worse than to clean up afterward.
Right. Well,
afterward, there is no afterwards. It's the end of the fucking. Oh, sure.
See, Madge has a foul mouth for a lesbian. She has the most vile mouth. See, now we're gonna that bleep you heard was just the most disgusting word you've ever heard.
Bloatedlesbian.com or yeastradio.com.
Bloatedlesbian.com.
That's yeastradio.com. This is where you get the pure Madge. If you're unable to get pure Madge on this broadcast,
I don't know what the word was I just said.
Well, Madge, you have to understand this, okay? In the UK, you're allowed to plunder trillions of dollars. Yeah. You're allowed to murder millions of people. You're allowed to launder the money of dictators around the world. But please do not use the C word or the F word or the S word or the D word or the
P word. Well, how are you supposed to talk about the Queen? Oh, that's the point. Is that it? You can't talk about royalty.
Oh, no. Never insult the Queen.
No, or a famous pop star who used to live in New York either. Not on this radio show.
Who?
Hey, speaking of famous pop stars, I got a programming note. Jarvis Cocker. We have a meeting with Jarvis set for the next few weeks. We're hoping to get him on the show, so that's an interesting little programming note.
I don't think you're allowed to say his last name, though, are you?
Oh, that's right. We're going to have to Jarvis bleep her.
Well, that's Jarvis ring. That's his nephew who lives in Brittany.
No, we're totally messed up. See, I could have said SC. Can I spell things? I could have said, like, what happens when you do screwed. But I didn't.
Okay, you see, we're being taunted, and Ofcom is sitting there listening hard, going, oh, they're going to mess up. I know somebody's going to forget to bleep one of these words sooner or later.
You know,
but anyway.
Really nice, I stay in Chicago with a family, my sister and her family, and there's kids there. And I do this all the time. And as a result, the kids have a new vocabulary now, thanks
to
Auntie.
Oh, no. Do you want to sit down here for a bit?
Yeah, let's have a seat.
Let's have a seat. Okay, Max, you sit here. Madge, you sit here.
That's pretty. What is that this triangular thing?
That's a fake pyramid.
Really? Why?
I'm not sure. Some of this stuff is very old. This is we learned about this. You can go to wikipedia.com, wikipedia.org, and actually
there's some Roman artifacts here.
Yeah.
For sure. They're the Roman bath.
Really?
Over there, that's from Roman times. That's actual
no
Roman
kidding.
Bath times.
Oh,
do you want to go to the Roman baths and record from there?
Roman,
see? Only on Resonance 104.4 FM can you hear Madge Weinstein in a Roman bath with Max Kaiser.
Can I cleanse my female area?
Douche. We call that douche in France, so you can say that's the same word for showering.
Okay, I can douche.
Okay, yeah. So Max Kaiser, what do you think about that Bloomberg reporter? Should we move on to something else in the markets and the spiraling debt collapse and the economy is collapsing once again here? Everybody's shocked that there's a second leg down. Shock, shock, shock.
Did it stop collapsing? Did I miss a break or something?
That's a good point.
What did Madge
when did it stop collapsing? I didn't know there was a break.
Exactly. Well, the media and bankers tried to tell you that it had stopped collapsing. I think it had something to do with the fact that there were alleged threats of regulation, and they all pretended, they coordinated their agreement here and said, "Oh, it's all fine now, and we don't need to worry about regulation anymore." So let's go sit over on that bench over there.
I call this. I have a new analogy: the Portrait of Dorian Gray market, and I will explain if you will allow me.
We're going to allow you this, Max.
Yes.
You know, in the story, The Portrait of Dorian Gray, the portrait is getting older and older while Dorian Gray is stuck in time. He's stuck at whatever age he is in the story. And then eventually the tragedy is, the time catches up, reality catches up. Now, similarly, these markets for the past 5 years have been kept artificially young using program trading and off-balance sheet financing, and they've been injected with Botox, essentially financial Botox, to make them look healthy and look like they're not collapsing. But just like the story of Dorian Gray, eventually time and reality catch up, and we're seeing now the move, which you'd have to go back, I guess, to 1938, which is after the Depression and after the big stimulus of the 30s, when the market had a fake rally in the U.S., and then it collapsed for real. You know, the 1938 collapse was much worse than the 1933 collapse, and that's what we're seeing now.
You know, I have a metaphor, too, with respect to my female anatomy. Now, you know, a prolapse is similar to a collapse in that if you have too many babies as a woman and you never take time to recover and heal properly and you just go back to work lifting things, your vagina will prolapse, Max.
Yeah.
It will just fall out.
What was that last bit?
It will just fall out.
Well, a vaginal collapse, vaginal, fallout is a good analogy because essentially the New York Stock Exchange is the womb of capitalism in America. And it's been giving birth to phony buying programs for years now, without proper healing, as you might say, without a proper financial recession to weed out the weaklings, and as a result is suffering from this financial prolapse. The entire New York Stock Exchange womb is falling out onto the street.
So again, once again, only on Resonance 104.4 FM do you learn about market prolapse right here coined by Madge Weinstein, has come up with a new phrase. In fact, you know, these financial collapse books are big time. You can make a lot of money on this. I think Madge Weinstein should come out with a book, Market Prolapse.
I can use pictures. I can have pictures of
it. Yeah, just a picture book.
Yeah, good idea. I'll do that.
Good idea. Okay. So, Max, you did mention high-frequency trading.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
What about the fact that I saw in Zero Hedge, I was too busy with Kaiser Report to really delve deep into the story, but I heard that the SEC or some sort of regulator asked for the actual algorithms, the secret sauce of these high-frequency trading algorithms?
Yeah, that's a big story, isn't it? There's a lot of lawsuits flying around, and the SEC now wants the code for the high-frequency trading. And, of course, the banks that engage in this type of thing may claim that this is not inconsistent with their mandate to maintain fair and orderly markets, that this is perfectly above board. But, of course, that's false. And now the SEC is finally, you know, making some noise about investigating this obvious criminal enterprise, this racketeering, this siphoning, as I call it. And now the question is, will they get, is it a showpiece, do you think? Or do you think they're really, you know, going after the crooks?
Well, I find this a very unique aspect of our modern day financial and economies, because you see this in the high frequency trading, the whole financial system, that using proprietary rights, like nobody's allowed to know what they're doing with these machines that are siphoning off $100 million a day from the markets. The same with Monsanto. We're not allowed to know, because of proprietary rights for them, what is actually in their seeds or their fertilizer. And the same with the fracking. You know, the proprietary rights over and confidentiality over what is in the chemicals that they're pouring into our groundwater supply. And this is so unique to our oligarchic financial so-called democracies.
But isn't what you're calling high-frequency trading, isn't that just all trading? Isn't that how everything works on Wall Street now, that it's these algorithms that are so fast that, I mean, I thought that was the whole thing.
No, our pension funds, Joe Bag of Donuts, or you, Madge Weinstein, if you wanted to go trade, your trade would be public. So these guys with their secret machines will front run you, basically. They basically will steal your money. As soon as you enter it, you're a little tiny guppy that's just about to be pounced on by a big shark.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's nice. I'm glad I took out my money from all that crap before, early 2008, before the market crashed, thanks to Max.
Yeah, well, when Madge landed at the airport and the welcoming committee was there, the first thing he did was whip off his belt and unzip.
First of all, her.
She unzipped her belt right in my face, and I'm thinking, wow, this is a dream come true. And she reaches into her proleptic gap.
It's called a garter.
Her garter, and whips out a 1 ounce pure bouillon maple leaf.
Yeah.
And I realized that this person is a survivor. They understand the risks involved, and this is someone who will be with us for a while, as the listeners to this show, who all bought gold at 150 pounds an ounce. Now I believe it's 11 or 1200 pounds an ounce.
Yes, well, she is a bloated Jewish lesbian, so she doesn't know how to survive.
Holocaust money.
And we're surviving, we're enduring right now a financial holocaust, right, Max?
Yeah, you could say that. There's the globe's going up in flames in ways. People are being pushed into camps, whether it's prisons. You know, I see the story that broke yesterday that was a tragedy, is that I believe it was the state of Illinois. You can correct me on this, but they are now outsourcing their entire state penal correctional institutes to Correction Corps of America, the private, publicly listed prison company, which, of course, uses their profits to lobby government and to lobby the courts to make it easier to get put people in jail. And that's the growth industry, is prisons and fake trading on Wall Street.
Well, that is in Ohio. But remember what they found in Arizona, that all those bills to very harsh sentences on illegal aliens, that they were not going to send them back, deport them, but they were going to put them indefinitely in U.S. prisons. Right. Well, who created that, and who created the media hype and scare, right, but these Correction Corps of America?
There's a name of a lobbying organization. They were talking about Democracy Now! A few weeks ago. I can't remember the name of it, like Alfred or something like that. But there's this, what I'm talking about? There's a specific group of lobbyists that this has all been intentional. And then I started looking at, after reading this article, that it all goes back to the 13th Amendment, which, contrary to the way I was raised in America, didn't actually end slavery. It just said, slavery is illegal unless you're in jail, so we'll just put all the blacks in jail. And I'm thinking, how does this not make the news? I mean, this is a big deal, isn't it?
Well, how does that not make the news? Exactly. You know, there have been two stories this week, also covered on Democracy Now!, that just is so shocking, that you see a lot of hysteria in our communities about we must go defend people from these evil dictators in, you know, the Arab world. And they'll point to these five people they killed or whatever. And what's emerged from the WikiLeaks documents this week, but that the U.S., these soldiers, took a family of 11 or 12 people, handcuffed them, put them on the ground, including a five-month-old baby and a five-year-old, and assassinated them in cold blood. They were handcuffed, a handcuffed five-month-old, and they assassinated it. And then, they called in an airstrike, and to hide the evidence. This is a crime in any part of the world. The other bit of information that emerged was these Guatemalan research on sexually transmitted diseases. I think it was syphilis that they were looking at in particular, or gonorrhea. And they intentionally inflicted gonorrhea and syphilis and all these other sexually transmitted diseases on thousands of Guatemalans without their consent. 83 of them died. Now, if we imagine how the press and the tabloids and Fox News would be painting that of a reason to go invade Iraq and kill Saddam Hussein, because he's evil. He's so evil and vile that he would inflict people with sexually transmitted diseases and kill them.
And from what I understand, it was the same doctor that was involved in Tuskegee.
Yes, it was.
Which is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, it happened during the 1940s when America was presumably fighting the Nazis for doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. So, again, like, it's, you know, it's part the media, part the population. They're willing to go kill people. I don't know, it soothes something inside them to go kill other people when they themselves are doing it. Their own tax funds are doing the same exact crimes.
Well, we're idiots. We are idiots and we're sadistic. We have no health care. And anybody who has a chance of getting health care or some sort of social welfare system, we kill them because that's really annoying.
Now, the other thing you were talking about, you know, prison, I saw on the Daily Mail today, you know, one of these trashy tabloids here, but the 17-year-old girl stole from a shop during the riots one bottle of Lucozade. So about, it's, you know, Gatorade. And it's about $2. She's serving 8 months in prison. This is how swift the justice was. The riots only happened a few weeks ago. For $2 theft, she, which of course would be covered by insurance anyway, $2 theft, she is serving 8 months in prison. Nobody, and the population of Britain was so angry. They want her to do 16 years if possible. But where are they about the bankers? We've just learned this week that Paul Fisher, a member of the Bank of England committee, he said that bankers are privately telling him in person that they don't need liquidity or capital reserves because the taxpayer will bail them out if anything goes wrong. Where are the population? I bet you anything they're drunk right now.
Well, they're drunk in Spain, trashing towns in Spain, and committing the same acts of larceny and destruction, and being lauded in the pages of the Sunday Times as having fun on their holidays. But if it happens in their own country by a minority, then, of course, that's unacceptable. But when these crackers go down to the south of Spain and do the exact same thing, they write about it in a column in the Sunday Times, what I did on my holidays.
Well, I think that the reason people don't react in the U.S., the tool that Fox News and those other organizations use is they just say, well, you can't do anything to the bankers because they're job creators. They stimulate the economy. They're creating jobs. And nobody ever says, well, where are the jobs? You know, I haven't seen an ad for Goldman Sachs that they're hiring lately.
Well, in fact, Max, you've interviewed Steve Keen about that. He said the opposite. He said they destroy jobs.
If jobs were being created, then you would have capital forming in the economy instead of capital shrinking. You would have employment rising instead of shrinking, and you would have a savings rate increasing instead of shrinking. The reason all these things are going in reverse is because jobs are being destroyed by the bankers. So the argument is so specious. It's so obviously wrong. Just look at some very simple numbers that come out of the economic reports, and you can clearly see that that is just completely false. The fact that there's no debate is a triumph of the will of Fox News and Murdoch to create an iron curtain of debate where only the extreme argument of the extreme banking terrorist is allowed to be presented. And of course they put on a nice tie and suit and it looks like romper room, and people are fooled by that. And that's unfortunate, because the people who are pointing the fingers at the rioters 2 weeks ago, well, they themselves will be at the barricade soon enough.
Yep.
Matt Weinstein, will you be at the barricade?
No, I don't think they serve enough food there for me.
But you're at a virtual barricade, right? You're doing something different.
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, like, I feel like I've hit the point of the ultimate protest, which is I just have to leave the country. I know it's not just the U.S., but so much of it is in the U.S., and that's what I identify with. And, you know, I believe in direct action since, you know, voting really is mostly symbolic, and you have to do things that mean something to you. And the most meaningful thing I can do is just leave that whole system and just say, you know what? I mean, I gave hope for America when George Bush II got elected, in quotes. But it's just so ridiculous. But I left the country before I came back. It was when Clinton was president. It seems like the Democrats are the ones that can get me out of the country, because that's when I really lose hope. The ones that supposedly that brand themselves on hope and sell themselves that they're going to fix everything. And then they turn out to be even worse because they don't even understand the system that they're supposedly fighting.
Well, yeah, that's because, of course, you know, when you're in opposition, you're saying you stay in the country. That's because it seems like it's just that red team or the blue team.
Right.
You know, they do divide it up into this fake war, and you realize that you're part of that matrix as well. They've got you controlled. That they always give out hope. They always leave the hope that someday your team will be in the White House, and that's why you stay there. And as soon as, of course, as they get in, it's the exact same policy. There's no change at all. And yet, the voting population, you do see how controlled they are, because they, like all these people who are against Obama, they really, really genuinely seem to believe that he's a lot different from Bush, that he's uniquely Marxist or uniquely reckless with fiscal policy, that it's not exactly the same. They don't see the continuity. And if you're outside the country, if you're outside the system and the politics and the mind control, then you could see quite clearly that it's the same thing.
Yeah, and I think didn't he just roll back some smog regulations yesterday or something like that? Like, just, it's just so blatantly offensive, the stuff he does. And I really feel like, I mean, I took two courses of economics in college, and I feel like I have vastly more knowledge than he does about economics. I feel like he knows absolutely nothing about the economy. And I was fooled because he was a law professor at Harvard and all this, and the first black editor of the Harvard Law Review, all this. But it never occurred to me he doesn't know a damn thing about economics. But he's responsible for the, you know, worst economic disaster since, or if not worse than, the Depression.
Well, Steve Keen, who is a professor and an economist down in Sydney, Australia, he has been on our show many times on our Kaiser Report and On the Edge, and he often says, well, economists are the most dangerous people in the world because they don't know what they're actually talking about. So he might actually understand what they teach at university, but it's better to be outside that system because they teach you totally false, bogus economics. And Obama uses people like, well, the Robert Rubin people and Larry Summers. He's got all those people who have destroyed the economy over and over and over. They've never once succeeded. So why they keep on coming back? It's a plan.
I have a question for Max. Okay. Yeah. So going to economics, like, I thought, and I could be totally wrong, but that they taught us in economics that when inflation goes up, unemployment goes down, and vice versa. Is that not right?
Well, that's a good point, because inflation typically is associated with the wage price inflation, that wages are going up, and the prices are inflating.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a misnomer to say that in this age, to talk about inflation and deflation without really expanding that debate to understand that we're not talking about wage inflation here, and we're not even talking about inflation per se. The overriding theme in this market is actually deflation, and it's you could say that it's a balance sheet deflation or recession. The credit is collapsing. But to talk on this inflation a little bit more, there's you could break it down into two types of inflation. There's the inflation that is prices are pulled higher by rising wages. So wages are increasing, and this is pulling prices higher. Then there's another type of inflation called cost push inflation. Prices are being pushed higher. And this is what we're experiencing now. Prices are being pushed higher, not because demand. It's not that demand is not rising, you know, raising prices. Prices are being pushed higher because of all of the money that's being created to try to deal with the deflation or the collapse in the bond market. And the money that's being created to deal with the collapse is not circulating in the economy. It's being hoarded by the same banks that created the problem. And as a result, this is driving a lot of speculation and driving things like food and energy higher. And so people say, oh my God, price for food and energy is going up. That's inflation. Well, the prices are going up, that's true, but it's not because there's increased demand. It's going up because of the, you'd have to come up with a different term than either inflation or deflation. Some have tried to crack the nut here and called it, you know, stupidaflation or crackaflation or biflation, I've also heard, theftflation, crimeflation. It falls outside of your standard neoclassical definition. And
that was when everybody was obeying the rules, that worked. But since everybody breaks the rules and makes up their own ways to steal money and create these securities and all this, then none of that works anymore?
Well, labor has, over the past four decades, become less of the underlying forces that drive the economy. Labor is being squeezed out. And what's replaced labor is financialization. And the financialization used to be 5% of the economy. Now it's more than 50% of the economy. So the host is being gobbled up by the cancer. And now it's in the end game where they're trying to, you know, put a dress on the cancer and say, well, this is, in fact, what defines us as an economy, is the parasite. The parasite is the economy, and we don't want to kill the parasite because otherwise we'd kill the economy. But you know, getting back to the Obama question, when he was running, he did something or said something that got my attention. He put Paul Volcker on his advisory board. Mm-hmm. And Paul Volcker is the guy who killed this in this type of trend back in the 70s by raising interest rates to 15-16%. But as soon as he took office, Paul Volcker was immediately sidelined. That was the first indication to me that the Obama was going to renege on every single one of his campaign promises. And he has virtually reneged on every single one of his promises, except, of course, the one where he said he'd get his kids a dog.
Well, he has done stuff. He's eliminated Don't Ask, Don't Tell or whatever. And I think he's done a lot of surfacey social things in order to appease the gay community, which because the gay community only care as a member of it, being I'm a lesbian, I don't know if I mentioned that, but as a gay in the gay community, all the gay community cares about is social stuff, like the right to get married, you know, the right to get murdered in the military, the right to kill people in the military is very important to us, and then we'll vote for whoever whoever you tell us to.
The gay lobby in America has been very, very successful. Yeah. You know, the equal rights for women lobby has collapsed.
Yeah.
The civil rights for minorities has collapsed. Yeah. But the gay rights movement is alive and expanding and doing quite well. So they're organizing and doing extraordinarily well. and should be a model. You know, the gay lobby should be a model for any other progressive movement who's trying to make inroads against the corporate fascist state.
Well, but I see what Madge is saying there, and it could be picked off very easily, just like the evangelical Christian anti-abortion movement, that they only vote on for whoever will say that they'll ban abortion for, you know, the other half of the population that who will have it in the case of a necessity. But of course, then they always get screwed over by the warmongering, the financial rape, the economic collapse. But all they care about is that one social issue. And that's what Madge is saying, is like I'm sorry, Madge, but you look very manly today. You have a bit of stubble.
Well, listen, you know, that happens. Your microphone has a bit of stubble, too. It looks like a giant vagina. Do you care to describe it?
So how is there actually anybody in the gay and lesbian community that is trying to organize economic awareness or, you know, lobby?
Rachel Maddow.
Oh, true.
But she's obviously not, you know, presenting herself as a gay person. She just happens to be gay. So, no, there's not.
Well, I mean, can the gay community expand their remit to gay marriage, which is pretty much now the law of the land in America, or soon to become. That's a major triumph for civil rights. And so going back to the Stonewall riots of New York City, which was the beginning of the gay rights movement in the, I guess it was the 1970s, they now have achieved pretty much the holy grail of that movement. They have the marriage is legal.
Well, it's a far from that, because we have a few states, but it really doesn't mean anything until it works at the federal level, because then we have tax fairness and all this. But it's this symbolic thing that I guess is very important.
So can you expand that cross it over, I guess, is the question. We mentioned Rachel Maddow there. I mean, can the gay rights movement cross over to take on some of these bigger economic issues?
I don't know. I think it's like Stacey was saying with, you know, it's because we do behave like evangelicals. We're just obedient, single-issue voters. That I don't know how you would translate that, because then we wouldn't be single issue voters anymore.
Yeah. We had one titan in that movement with Harvey Milk, who was assassinated. And of course, that's always a problem with any social progressive movement in America, is that they tend to assassinate the leaders.
But also, I mean, the gay and lesbian, well, the gay community has a very powerful, they're very powerful target market for as a consumer, because the pink pound is considered something that everybody wants to get.
So yeah.
You have a lot more economic power than, say, the evangelical community.
But the problem with that is, because we have so much economic power, is because we have so much wealth, is exactly why we don't care about other people. That's why the gay community doesn't care about healthcare so much and these other issues. Well, they say they do. But because we're comfortable, so we're not suffering at the bottom with all these lower middle class and lower class people, whatever you call them.
Yeah.
So they're not.
Well, that's always the case. Is that that saying that people are, you know, democratic or progressive as kids, but once they become adults and have some money, they become Republican, because now they suddenly have a stake in the game and they have become conservative, and so in the gay community, they start off better off due to the fact that they're the structure of the unit, the gay family unit, is already pretty high cash flow positive from day one.
But the trick is, we think we're liberal, though. Most gay people would I'm sure say they're Democrats. The problem is, to be a Democrat in America is really to be a Republican, and that's the problem. It's so confusing and so difficult to get people out of that mindset, because it's such an incredible, I don't even know.
Yeah, from out here, you know, from Europe, the Democrats in America look very right wing. Yeah. It's further to the right, I'd say, of the Tories, for example. And the population is very, I mean, I visit a lot of so-called left-wing American blogs, and a lot of them are very pro-war. They're pro-bombing right. people that they don't really understand what's going on. They like the whole Libya thing, we don't know why we're bombing it, but everybody's for it. And nobody knows who the players are on the ground. There's, except for some wild guy in some caftan, you know, flying around with camels. But nobody knows anything else about it. But they're all for bombing people.
Yeah, bombing people's fun. You know, you do it on video games. It's fun. It's even more fun when it's when you can, you know, run something in Las Vegas that kills people through drones remotely. It's just a video game. You're not really killing anyone.
But there's a drone game in Vegas?
Well, isn't that how they run the drones? It's from, like, Las Vegas.
Oh, I think it's from Miami, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I should have done some of that when I was there.
Madge Weinstein was in Miami. So, and Max, there's another story out. That,
yeah.
Now, I haven't had a chance to really research it, but the FHFA is suing 17 banks for defrauding Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, this is not the Department of Justice or the SEC suing these banks. It's the FHFA looking for, I guess they say they were defrauded of almost $200 billion. Now, do you think this will actually go to some sort of criminal trial? Do you think it'll settle? So they say they've been defrauded of $200 billion. Is it going to be a $1 billion settlement? And to the population, that sounds like a huge amount, and it's been sorted.
Well, the first reaction that I saw on ZeroHedge.com, which caught my eye, was Tyler Durden made the point that you've got one group of bailed out institutions, the banks, suing another failed out institution, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So now these two groups that were failed out for hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, are suing each other. Which will incur another huge round of incredible losses that will require another huge bailout. So that's the problem. And to get to your point earlier, Madge, about someone like Obama or someone in the Democratic side or the left, they have the best of intentions, but they have no idea how the system works. And
right.
I've said this many times myself, that the problem is that the left or the progressives think they're going to win this purely on taking a moral position.
Yeah.
And that has failed, clearly. And so a new solution must be contemplated. And I would say that part of that solution would mean that there has to be an attempt to understand how these systems work, first of all, to deconstruct them or to reverse engineer the problem and then come up with a new way to battle the problem. But you have to acknowledge really the technicalities of what's going on. And I've never met anyone on the left who is willing to do that. And what happens is that the left really only comes into play after things get really, really bad. The anti-war movement in the United States in the 70s really was galvanized after the Kent State tragedy,
yeah,
where the reserve guard killed some students, and then suddenly the anti-war movement was off and running and the war ended. But that took 10 years to do this, and you had that hard left at that time, the Malcolm X, the Martin Luther King, that was hard left, the Weather Underground, the Black Panthers, that's the hard left. And then it went into a remission for 35, 40 years. And there is no left. There is certainly no hard left. Rachel Maddow is not, she's right of center. She's less right wing than Rush Limbaugh, but she's still right of center.
But when you talk about like Vietnam ending and stuff, I really feel like the more I think about it, it seems like, I feel like the anti-war movement in the 70s and the 60s was a failure, and they were quashed because of the military intervention. And then it looks like to me like we basically appeased China and just said, okay, we're going to recognize China and not Taiwan when Nixon went to China and with Kissinger and all that. And then all of a sudden Vietnam's over and China wins the Cold War. I mean, how much of it is because of the anti-war movement versus our politics?
And of course, the anti-war movement failed to root out all of the miscreants, chief amongst them being one of Nixon's aides-de-camps, Dick Cheney, who then went on to reconstruct the entire military-industrial complex and prison-industrial complex under Bush, too.
You know, I was going to say that... I forgot. I had a really good point to make about... Oh, well, the thing about when you say hard left...
Yeah.
The thing is, it's not that the policy... The important thing about having those extremes is actually putting ideas out there that might seem totally radical and crazy, that all we have are radical, crazy, right-wing ideas. all over the world being...
Them, they just don't get voice. Like, if you listen to Democracy Now!, you'll hear from, you know, people like Kucinich and Ralph Nader and a lot of people that have...
Yeah, but they're not the equivalent of, like, the neocons, for example.
Because they don't get the voice.
Yeah.
Because Democracy Now! Is on some rinky-dink satellite channel that nobody listens to, but Fox News has millions of households all over the world.
Well, Ralph Nader... perhaps is the equivalent of, say, like Paul Wolfowitz on the right. The people like Paul Wolfowitz who voice insane ideas that, we're acting upon, like all these bombings of all these countries around the world. Yeah, but Michael Moore, again, like Max was saying, he doesn't really understand economics at all, so he doesn't understand. When I first met Max, right. The thing, I was trapped in that sort of thing where I really believed, I disbelieved him when he was talking about the outright criminality of the bank, right. of bankers. And I thought, no, they're, how can that be? That can't possibly be true because, yeah, they're respected this members of the community. They become Treasury Secretary. How could that possibly happen? And I think that's what most people fail to do, is they fail to look at it as a criminal racket. You have to look at, observe them as if they were Ted Bundy and John Gotti operating our financial system.
Did you read, it was an article about the German bankers. It was either Vanity Fair or the New Yorker, I'm not sure which one. And they interviewed some big German banker guy, like from the government, their financial government guy with really tight glasses, bald head. And they're like, how come in Germany, they asked the guy, how come in Germany, you know, you have these people that control finances and then they don't go work for Goldman Sachs. They don't, you know, they earn a few hundred thousand dollars a year and then that's it. And they don't go cash in at Goldman, they said, because that would be disrespectful. Or not disrespectful, immoral. But yeah, immoral, basically.
Well, just to get back for a second, you know, the point about the ideas on the right, all ideas are considered. You say crazy right-wing radical ideas are not immediately dismissed. And it tends to be creative on the right wing. They come up with some wild ideas, like John Poindexter 10 years ago came up with terror futures markets, you know, how to turn terrorism into a futures market and to capitalize on it that way. And this idea was floated. It was actually in operation for a short period of time, and then it was shot down. But the left would never come up with, like, a peace futures market, you know, how to monetize peace, how to monetize resistance, create a futures market based on a peace initiative. They would never come up with that idea because the right would shoot it down and then the left would cave. They have no,
right.
Because ultimately also another problem is that in a market like we have now, which is run by fiat money, which is just printed and counterfeited, anybody who comes up with some good ideas on the left is immediately bought off. And they just migrate over to the right, and they become silenced.
The left wants to compromise. The right wants to fight. So the right will always win. They will always win because when you have one side that's compromising, one side that is firm, the firm side is going to win. That's just how it works. And it's just stupid to compromise.
Well, the metrics need to shift. So the left metrics, basically, what they look at are jobs.
Yeah.
And they look at that's kind of the number one metric that the left uses. And I think that the left needs to come up with some new metrics.
Yeah, like a job where you make $3 an hour and the government pays for your welfare because you work at Walmart. I mean, what kind of job is that?
Yeah, but Max, the other thing you often talk about is that loser mentality and the fear mentality. And that's what the right operates on and gets from their voting population. So whether it's Wall Street or Vegas, it's the person losing that becomes addicted to losing and giving and giving and giving more, and they become very engaged in the process of this losing proposition. Whereas if you're trying to tell people, let's gain some rights, let's be all positive and love each other, it's hard to galvanize the people as much with love and positivity
well,
as with negativity.
The way I've seen it played out on the periphery is that the left, to some degree, if you want to classify it as such, has developed a metric which they call the public domain. And the public domain has done battle with the private domain. The private domain is obviously the purview of private corporations and the right. The left, in the interest of expanding the public domain, came up with things like file swapping, Napster, P2P, open source, crowdsourcing, crowdfunding. These are all actually left-wing agendas. However, they're not positioned as left-wing by the left-wing. They're always positioned as technological innovations, and they're not owned by the left. The left, you know, Obama, for example, if he were truly in the spirit of left-wing agenda, would set as a metric for the United States of America the expansion of the public domain, the expansion of public parks, the expansion of a free internet, the expansion of the commonly owned public domain. That's the source of true wealth, is the commonwealth. Private wealth has its place.
But that's socialism.
It's not so, well, I'm saying, but that's how it's shot down. But you know, so, but then the left will immediately will give up at that point. Whereas if there was a functioning left, that argument, that fake argument of socialism, can be easily defeated.
It should be, because all you have to do is look at Roosevelt. And from what I understand, Roosevelt said, okay, the private sector should be creating jobs. They're not. So we're going to tax them, and the public sector will create jobs.
Well, that makes sense. But look at Google. Google is a left-wing socialist agenda. They took the public domain and created a $200 billion market cap for it. There's nothing that stops the government from creating a competitive Google-like product that would expand the public domain for the public's commonwealth. Obviously, in the area of healthcare, you would want to spend the least amount of your after-tax dollar on health care, and you can only do that by expanding the public ownership of the health industry, not by giving it to private industry. And again, the rhetoric that one can use can defeat the narrow interests of the corporate and the private domain if there's some stick-to-itiveness. You know, if you have the ability to hang with it. I mean, Obama, if he had 8 years as president, and it looks like he's only going to have 4 years, he could have set this agenda when he took office, and he could have expanded the public domain and the commonwealth, and the result of this would have been a dynamic, functioning U.S. economy. But now we have a collapse in the U.S. economy, and there will be a collapse that will engender a radical left-wing agenda, which is always happens.
It's a collapse of the collapsed economy, because it's already collapsed.
Yeah, but that's one, another thing, Max. Doesn't it have to collapse? Because, again, the population itself, half of it does not even believe in data. Like, you can present to them the fact that every single other developed nation has, for example, a public health care system, and every single other country spends half as much money for better results. That doesn't seem, that the facts, like, doesn't seem to do anything to change.
Emotions work better than facts, and that's what.
And fiction and fantasies are much more powerful. The same thing with, you know, Americans will often talk about the road to serfdom, or socialism will make us poor and dilapidated. But when you travel through Europe, Madge, is the infrastructure better here, or is it better in where people openly, politicians openly campaign as socialists? Right. Or is it better in America, where we have the free market system?
We don't have an infrastructure in America. What is crumbling. I mean, there's no public transportation.
Now, Ayn Rand said this would happen in a socialist country.
It's fascinating, because I actually really loved her books. As I just found them fascinating. And I think she was right and wrong at the same time. She was right, but what she envisioned for happening because of collectivism is exactly what happened because of capitalism gone completely wacko.
Rigged market capitalism. It's not the capitalism that Adam Smith writes about.
Max, you've always talked about economic, you know, responding with economics as a protest. But don't you think now the only real, and I hate to say this because I've always considered myself a pacifist. I was, you know, abused in high school by these other lesbians and, you know, wannabe lesbians. I never even fought back, Max. I just don't believe in violence that much. But I still feel like the only way to get through this is through violence.
Well, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when it was clear that the banking jihadis and suicide bankers were going to keep this going until they killed the host, I made the determination, and I communicated through all my broadcasting outlets, to buy gold and silver, which is an economic response to this corruption. And I've been absolutely 100% correct on that. Yeah. Now, if you want to expand that, because gold and silver are the people's money, it's the commonwealth of the people, and if you want to expand on that and extend it to other areas of the economy, you can. So things have been rolling along pretty much exactly as I said that they would. I gave an economic solution. It's played out well. And but to your point, this collapse is in process. It's not going to, there's no force now that's going to stop it from hitting a nasty, violent end, as you're suggesting there. And this, of course, will give rise to a hard left, radical hard left group in the U.S., and it'll be played out along those lines. But if there were leaders, Obama certainly as president of the United States could act as a leader. And he could mitigate these corrupting forces, and he could avoid this eventuality. But he's not acting as a leader. I don't see any leaders in the United States. You mentioned Ralph Nader. He clearly is very strong on what needs to be done, but he hasn't been able to get himself elected. You've got a Ron Paul on the right who clearly understands the forces that are shaping the economy and what needs to be done. He and Ralph Nader, when they appear together, they agree on 90%. Of their agendas, he's in that same camp.
Have a baby together. If they could reproduce, I think they could create a nice person. Because the problem with what's his face Ron Paul is that he has some wonderful ideas about economics, but then he's like anti-abortion.
Yeah, but he wouldn't legislate on that. A lot of the evangelicals want to make it illegal and throw women in prison if they have that. He doesn't believe in abortion as a. I think he's evangelical himself, but he doesn't want to. He would always shrink the government,
but
so he wouldn't.
The healthcare though, he's against any sort of healthcare system too, right?
Yes, he is. But his ideas are that it would be cheaper if you removed all these monopolies. For example, health insurance companies in America are exempt from the monopoly laws. So they're allowed to have monopolies.
He's saying he would make that exempt so he would actually enforce monopoly laws?
He would get rid of all those monopolies. He would get rid of the CIA. He would get rid of the Homeland Security, like trillions of dollars that are now taken from the middle class and given to these, military industrial complex. All that money would be back in the hands of the population. So it would be interesting to see what, like America all the way up until very recently, you could just pay for your health care. Like in cash, because it wasn't that much.
What are we talking about in terms of healthcare? We're talking about the ability to realize group discounts. That when you have 300 million people all wanting to buy aspirin, you could probably get a better price than if you treat those 300 million people like one person negotiating with one aspirin seller. Now, where do we see this working? Oh, Groupon.
Yeah.
Groupon is supposed to be an IPO on NASDAQ worth tens of millions of billions of dollars because they offer group discounts on sushi. Well, what about group discount on healthcare and call it Health On, and it's going to be competing with monopolists. Okay, what do you have? You have competition, you have lower prices, the consumer benefits.
I think the future of healthcare is do it yourself. You order, I think there's going to be deregulation in the pharmaceuticals and the FDA. People like Michelle Bachmann want to get rid of them anyway. So no more FDA, no more regulation. You diagnose yourself on the internet, figure out what's wrong, and then you order your insulin from the cheapest company.
Yeah, but there has to be also some sort of way. I mean, somebody born paraplegic, how does that person take care of themselves? So there has to be, there obviously has to be a way to take care of them as a community can't just leave them lying on the ground. Some communities do, I guess, yeah.
That's what we do now. That'll continue. There'll be more efficient ways to dispose of them, though.
Well, that's all the time. We're going to have to start to wrap it up here, this episode of the Truth About Markets special with Madge Weinstein. Madge, do you have any last words to say to London?
I would just like to get feedback from the London audience about the riots that happened and what caused them. I would really like to know.
Well, 9 out of 10 of them will say that it's just random violence and evil people that they deserve to be shot. A lot of them said, a lot of them said they should be shot on sight. So they don't.
So they,
because Murdoch says this is the way it is.
I asked them, have you ever heard of any riots in history that had no sociological cause?
Only in your own country that happens. Only in your own country. Most Brits will be able to see the LA riots as having a sociological cause. Their own country, they can't because they'll go down that slippery slope into poverty as well. But Max Kaiser?
Well, how much time do I have?
You have about 40 seconds.
Okay. Well, as I've been saying about those LA riots, that as Frederick Bastiat said in his book, It came out in 1850. When you have the plundering class ruling the economy, expect plundering at the bottom end of the economy, and this is what we have. You have plundering at the top, so expect plundering at the bottom. If you want to get rid of plundering at the bottom, get rid of plundering at the top. Until David Cameron, that suppository salesman from Notting Hill, that Ponce, that twat, realizes what's going on here, and it's not going to change. And that's what I have to say about that.
This is a little horse that's going by. That's so cute. It's a little pony. Oh. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for. Say goodbye.
The horse just pooped by. Oh, yeah, definitely time to go.
Fresh poop. Bye, y'all.
What a smart horse.